And they said to one another, "What is it?" For they did not know what it was. And Moses said to them, "It is the bread that the Lord has given you to eat." Please be seated. So the questions begin, and these lessons are full of questions. Some of them are right there in the text, and some of them you can find in between the lines in different places. We begin with the journey in the wilderness in Exodus and the people of Israel. Moses, why didn't you just leave us in Egypt? Moses, what is this stuff we're supposed to eat? The people gathered around Jesus in Capernaum asked him, "What must we do to perform the works of God?" "Jesus, are you going to give us another sign? We need more miracles." "Jesus, what work are you performing? And by the way, how did you get here? Why did you leave us on the other shore? Where's our bread that you gave us yesterday? We need more of it. What are we going to do for food? Where's the sign? Why won't you be our king? Can you just do another miracle?" And I think the question that stood out the most for me that I want you to ponder throughout this sermon is this one: "Rabbi, when did you come here?" Think about that in Jesus. When did you come here? Questions abound for us this Sunday, and as usual, the answers are not what we expect. And certainly there are some times when we ask questions, but we don't really want to hear the answer. That's true for me, maybe for you as well. And it's often that way when talking to Jesus, isn't it? We have today more stories about bread. Bread from heaven, bread that saves, bread that is provided. It's almost like throughout the month of August, we have story after story from the Gospels about bread. I think August is sponsored by Oprah Winfrey in the Episcopal Church. We know she loves bread, right? And we have more to deal with coming up over the next few weeks. But in the middle of all that, today we pick up in the storyline just after the feeding of the 5,000 that we heard about last week, this miracle where Jesus has fed them with the two fish and the five loaves. And in today's telling, we link this receiving of bread to the Israelites wandering in the wilderness and God providing for them manna and quails. That's how our lessons start today, and we'll start there too. The lesson from Exodus kind of sets the stage. I'm sure, like me, you find it shocking to hear that people of God are actually complaining about something, right? It's unheard of. Politely, in our English translations, we call it murmuring, right? Just such a polite turn of phrase, right? But it's much worse than that in the Hebrew, and they are really whining. Let's just leave it at that. They even have the audacity to say that they were better off when they were slaves in Egypt, because at least we knew where our next meal was coming from, instead of being out here starving to death. "Moses, you let us out here. Here's a question for you. What are you going to do about it?" They're asking for help in search of answers for their questions. It is God who answers, though. God hears their cries, their questions, and he does provide the answer. One that God says God is going to use to see if they can really obey, follow instructions. So God provides. It says rain bread down from heaven. That's a really interesting image, isn't it? Bread of angels is what it says in our psalm. And when this heaven-sent bread appears after the dew dries off in the morning, the Israelites are confused by it. So I want you to ask this question back to me. What is it?
What is it?
What is it? All right, now use that same interrogative way of speaking by saying, "Manna." You do that? Manna. Manna? Right. In the Hebrew, manna literally means, "What is it?" Right, that's where the name comes from. So the Israelites would go off around and say, "Manna, manna, manna." And now it's a noun, right? And we use it in a different way. But they had no idea what it was. But they're fed by it, this "what is it" bread, along with the meat from the quail. God does provide. But it is not the end of the murmuring, right? So one wonders, what will they question next? Well, let's go to the gospel lesson and look at some other questions. Jesus has fed this incredible crowd, and of course they followed him. We've watched them journey around the shores of the lake. And they were not just fed by the loaves and fishes. They were filled to the brim, it says. They were stuffed. and there are leftovers that they filled up baskets with. Their physical hunger was completely satisfied by this miracle. Yet they follow Jesus again. They have more questions. They get up the next day and Jesus and the disciples are gone. They've gotten in their boat and escaped across the way to Capernaum. Yet the crowd continues to follow and to hunt them down. And the first thing they ask him is, "Rabbi, when did you come here?" Well, that's a doozy of a question for Jesus, for us to ask of Jesus. I think if we pay attention, if we seek after God, if we feed at this altar, shouldn't we too wonder in that process, "Jesus, when did you come here?" Beginning of every service, I pray with the altar party. I use this really ancient prayer, not something I came up with. It goes like this: "Be present, Lord Christ, for the hour of Eucharist is at hand. As you are known to your disciples in the breaking of bread, be now known to us in this mystery of our redemption." Mystery. See, Jesus knows when they're asking, "When did you come here?" They're not talking about, "Was it about 9:30 this morning? I mean, how did you make it?" It's bigger than that. He knew they are there, though, because they were fed by fish and bread, not because of any other reason. That's why they're following him. We don't have to go to the grocery store. This guy's going to feed us, right? We'll get some more meals from him. And Jesus knows he needs to respond to their questions, just as Jesus is responding to our own today. For in this exchange, I believe we can perhaps see a criticism of the 20th and 21st century church in America. So here's a question: does the church exist to provide what the people are asking for? If a church does not do so, is it okay for people to just move on and find another church? See, consumerism is such a part of our ethos in America that it certainly is pervasive in churches as well. And the megachurch movement has long fed off of that. What programs can we provide that will attract the largest crowds? You know, Paul is telling us in Ephesians that we should not be just tossed to and fro, right, by every wind of doctrine. But sometimes, to attract the crowds, churches will do that. How can we divide our own loaves and fishes enough to satisfy their earthly hunger? These are the questions these churches often ask. And just like in Capernaum long ago, those, my friends, are the wrong questions. Coming to church and worshiping a holy God is not about filling our belly. It's about that question from Jesus. He says to them, "You are looking for me. You came over here looking for me. But remember, you were there. You participated in that miracle. Let me ask you this. What do you think you really saw? Who did you see? And how does answering that question change you?" See, the people have a different plan. They want Jesus to be the new Moses, to lead them, to conquer the Romans. Last week they asked him to become the king. They want Jesus to talk to God on their behalf. They want Jesus to give them bread and fish. And Jesus reminds them what Moses already taught them. You saw it in the Exodus passage. The bread was not from Moses. The manna was not from Moses. It wasn't from the church. It wasn't about special powers coming from a special leader. It was from God. God provided bread from heaven, the bread of angels. And that bread, that "what is it" meal, was more than something to just sustain them physically. It was also to help them learn to trust in God. They needed to learn that as this new people out in that wilderness, wandering around for 40 years, that God is going to take care of them. In fact, they could not even collect the manna and save it for the next day. That's later in the passage, because it would turn nasty and foul. They couldn't eat it. Except on the Sabbath, you could collect 2 days worth the day before the Sabbath, so you didn't have to collect it on the Sabbath day. Pretty neat trick, God. They had to learn that, yes, God is providing our food each and every day. It's why Jesus teaches us in the Lord's Prayer, "Give us this day our daily bread." And similarly, I think today, people often ask of their church, "Well, what can you do for me, for my family, for my needs?" Well, the answer to that, I can tell you, is a lot, I hope. You know, we're going to help form you as disciples of Christ. We're going to provide quality programming for children and youth. We're going to go out into the community and help a lot of people. And that's part of it, but that's still the wrong question. At least it's in the wrong order. Jesus says we are not to work for food that perishes, but for food that endures. So instead of a consumer mentality, we also, me included, need to shift to this question, which the crowd around Jesus finally gets to. They ask him, Lord, what must we do to perform the works of God? You see how it's shifted? Not what are you going to do for me? What must we do to perform the works of God? And Jesus answers in a very strange way. Well, what did you see? It's not about what signs and miracles that I can perform for you. Jesus says it's about something that's already been given to you by God, and that is faith. Jesus says, this is the works of God, that you believe in him whom God has sent. Which I think brings us all the way back to question number one. Rabbi, when did you come here? Well, maybe one answer is from the very foundation of the world, right? After all things were created. We say that every week. Is that the answer they want? Is that an answer they can handle, that we can handle? I don't know. So we have to ask more questions. Jesus is asking, what did you see? I'll ask you that too. If you respond, as some of them did, we saw someone give us our fill of bread and fish, then you've missed it. If you saw a church that today does the programming that you specifically need or think you do, you have missed it, because we must start in a different place. We start with the mystery, with the unexplainable, the irrational, the countercultural, and that is the only way our hearts can be converted. Think about it. When you leave this altar rail today or any other time, perhaps ask yourself the question. You're going to have this put into your hand, right? Now, I did have someone tell me one time that they could believe this was the body of Christ, but they couldn't really believe it was bread. But we're going to place a piece of this into your hand, and I want you to think about it. What do you see when that's in your hand? What is it to you? Is it the bread that has come down from heaven? And how can you see it? Well, the only way is by the gift of faith, which is of God. That's what Jesus was telling them. But we got to keep asking, because it's really way bigger than that. You know, we should also ask this question. Jesus does answer it. Who is it for? Who is it for? Jesus says, very simply, it is for the life of the world. Nothing more than that. It is for the life of the world. And we get to participate in it. William Willimon is a Methodist bishop and a really amazing preacher. He says this about this passage. The one, Jesus, who speaks to us in this peculiarly metaphorical way, which he does all through the Gospel of John. I'm the bread of life. I'm the good shepherd. All these metaphors he used. The one who speaks in this metaphorical way is the one who desires not only that we think about him, but that we feed on him, ingest him, implying that we could starve to death without him. That's a cool kind of faith. And it's the first question to answer. What do you see? Maybe your answer can be just what those people gathered around him on the shore of the Sea of Galilee and Capernaum. Their faithful now response is the only response. Sir, give us this bread always. That's enough. That's the answer to all the questions. Give us this bread always. It's not about programming. It's not about manna or fish or loaves. It is about belief. The one thing we need in the one sent from God, not for the miracles, which are great, but simply and most powerfully life-changing, soul-searching, word-made-flesh truth, the very bread of life given for the life of the world. What did you see? What did you hold in your hands? I see life now. Right now and forever in Jesus Christ. If you answer that first, I think all the rest of it is gravy, or maybe just bread. Amen.